cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, transforming towards an empowered society. Absolutely wonderful to be with you. I'm very excited about today's show. I really am. I'm Adrian Groenewald. With me, Louis Groenewald, as always. And today's Leadership Masterclass will be special. It's probably our last one of 2016. We are sitting in the offices of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. Why? Because today's Leadership Master Lesson is about venturing into Nelson Mandela leadership with Sello Hatang, the CEO of Nelson Mandela Foundation. And then, closer towards the end of the conversation, we'll also look at leadership in South Africa in general as we look back at 2016. What a year it has been. What a year. Ups and downs, tough moments, remarkable, miraculous moments. And we'll certainly unpack that just a little bit towards the end of the conversation. And as we also have Tabasile Pumo, executive from Sibanye, the biggest mining house in the country and probably employer. So it's great to have her with us. And of course, Louis Groenewald, as I said. So Sello, it must have been special. I know you've read some personal letters and all those kind of things, and you often quote them. Maybe some gems. I mean, what may people not know about him because they kind of got to know him from a public point of view, if I can put it that way. What stands out for you? Just now you quoted a letter to his daughter, for example. But anything, yeah. anything that people may not know about this man?
You know, it's stuff that people know, but from my vantage point, maybe. So we've got notebooks here, and I'll have the pleasure, if we have time, at the end of this program, that I'll show you around, where we have letters from Madiba which dates back, and you have Madiba reflecting on, for example, one of the common things, common themes that run through those letters is the question of education. And in one of the letters, he starts off writing about the education of the children, whether it be his own children or other people's children. And he would kick off with that. That's why I think we're playing with a huge investment when we don't invest in the education of our children. And in fact, I'd even say that we are playing with something that we shouldn't even be playing with. By not investing in education, we are just closing the door for the future that we should have, or for the future that our children should have. So, personally, I've worked hard for girls' education, for example, but in addition to that, just education in general. Another thing that I thought I should mention is the question of hope. How it's a common thread through some of Madiba's papers, where he reflects on this question of hope. But my colleagues say that I tend to overemphasize hope and not commitment. And I want the listener out there to pair the two, because hope without commitment leads to no action. And hope with commitment means that you're putting yourself also on the line for the benefit of others.
So the commitment one could probably also replace with discipline. You can have lots of hope and dreams, but if you don't implement discipline and commitment, it goes nowhere.
It goes nowhere. In fact, one of my personal heroes, Vaclav Havel, who died recently, said that, and I paraphrase him, he said, I'm not an optimist because I don't believe that everything ends well. Nor am I a pessimist because I don't believe that everything ends badly. All I carry is hope. Hope is a state of mind that you should have, no matter, regardless of the circumstances that you find yourself in. And I think if we were to do that, he says that life without hope is a boring life. And I think we should remember that we can hold hope and live a life that can make a difference to others. And that's the thing that I think Madiba has taught me, at least in terms of some of the documents that we've seen.
Okay, before we expand more, Tabasile Pumo from Sibanye and Louis Grunwald, comments on that, some deep principles already right in the beginning of the conversation.
Look, for me, it's actually, I'm very happy that Madiba's memory, or rather what he wrote, resonates with me very well. I mean, I come from the township, so what Silo is talking about, education, we need more education than charity. And therefore, if I look at, even for me personally, I have been able to get to where I got to because somebody made sure that they prioritized education. But what's even more important is this issue of hope. You've got to hope that things will change, but that hope has got to be paired with determination and the commitment to see whatever you hope for see through. So I'm very excited that perhaps in my generation and the generation to come, if we keep it up, especially with education and a hope and the commitment message, we can be able to change the course of our history.
Louis and Selo, I mean, this hope, a leader that's got hope even in difficult times, maybe that's why they're able to remain positive. You look at them and you say they've got the weight of the entire country on their shoulders and things are getting really difficult, but somehow they remain positive and they have a sense of humor and they come across like they have no worries in the world, but of course they do. But maybe that hope thing has something to do with that.
I think so. Sarah's point mentioned about Mandela appreciating consistency as opposed to not trusting somebody is very important. It ties in. The nature of hope changes as you understand what it's supposed to be. For instance, hope with consistency means hope with commitment as well. So hope isn't just this kind of fleeting thing that you grab at straws. It's something far more deeper. Even spiritually, it's tied in with one's faith and your charity. In other words, your values that drive you. Or else, what is that hope? The hope must be something in a positive value system. And I think he represented that.
And in fact, I think if there's one thing that leaders have to strive for is where you try have a collective value system. Whether you agree or not with someone, you should at least have a collective value system. They should know your values. That there are some non-negotiables, and once people know the non-negotiables, it's easy to even follow. I was saying recently that what makes it possible for Brexit to happen, where Britain decides to exit the EU, all because you want to close your boundaries tighter. You want to close the other out. And I think it's those things that make it possible for leaders who shouldn't lead end up leading. Because a vacuum is created where collective values or values are no longer known. And when in the absence of knowing the values that you hold dear, anything goes. So even a leader who shouldn't be there then end up making it.
I'm going to throw out a few quotes that I tweeted recently that I think may describe the legacy of Nelson Mandela's leadership. What made him such a special leader? I put down this statement. Know who you really are and why you are here. Then you can lead from strength rather than from weakness and uncertainty. That's my impression. This is one of the reasons why he was so effective as a leader and so admired. He knew who he was and why he was here.
You know, I spoke at a farewell event for matriculants recently, and I was saying that when you are still in school, the school system makes you believe that the world is a good place. Particularly, these were black kids I was talking to. And I said, it will take, the world makes you believe that all is good because somebody pays for it. Somebody looks after it. You leave the schooling system, you go into a university. It's a different world. The world wants you to now believe that you're actually not good. The world wants you to believe that, particularly in our context, when you're black, that the statistics that came out from the statistician general, who told me a couple of days ago that before I even get to the university degree, that you have kids who go to university. Since 1985, you've had white kids graduating from university consistently. So the numbers keep going up. With black kids, the numbers have been on free fall.
Really?
Free fall since 1985. This is from the time of the apartheid government, 1985 to 1990 comes Madiba's release. 1990 to 94, we get our freedom. From that time, 21 years later, numbers are still on free fall. Surely, we should ask ourselves, how is that possible? In a country of Nelson Mandela, who made us believe that it is possible for you to be black and achieve and be great at what you do, yet the system is resilient enough to say, no, you're not good enough. So another statistic that was very disturbing was another one that said around the how when you come out, a degree of a black child and a degree of a white child are not the same. I'm not talking about the university, from whether you are from UCT or Vets, or by being black and you've got a degree, when you get into university, you are likely to get out into the job market. You are highly unlikely to get a job when you're black. But when you come out and you're a white boy or a white girl, you're just going to walk in. Why am I raising this? Raising this because the question that we should ask ourselves about Madiba's legacy is we should be dealing with the difficult questions, not the easy questions that we are comfortable with. Madiba was a freedom fighter, and a freedom fighter who yesterday we marked the anniversary of the establishment of Umkhonto weSizwe. So while emphasizing Madiba the peace builder, the peacemaker, we must also know there is a time when you must face the truth about our country and say, what do we need to do differently? And I think that question of doing differently is a question that should bother all of us, Adrian. And I'm saying to the listeners out there, for as long as we are comfortable, we will one day wake up with a sense of discomfort that we have now because of Fees Must Fall. May we not have another Fees Must Fall that makes us uncomfortable. Rather, respond to these statistics and say, what can we do differently?
So we can have good conversations about his leadership legacy, but if we don't stand up and ask the difficult questions, we're probably not living his legacy.
No, and when you say, the statement that you read was, Madiba succeeded because he knew who he was. It's not enough to know who you are. I'm saying it takes a step further. You must know who you are, but be determined to put your foot down and say, this is who I am. And it's only when the country recognizes that, with a sense of empathy too, that we can achieve the country of Madiba's dreams. And I told you earlier on that Madiba says that if there's one question that should bother all of us when we wake up every morning is, am I doing enough, or what am I doing to help build a country of my dreams? And that question should bother all of us. What am I doing in my station? And I'm following up on your comment about knowing who you are. My station is a nurse. As a nurse, do I treat people who come in as statistics? This is yet another patient who's got AIDS, who's got this, and it's just a tick box of what, or do you put a little bit more care into the system? Because it's only when we take personal responsibility that the system can be rebuilt. In other words, I'm saying, again, going back to knowing who you are, but you are part of a system. Make the system work for others.
Then the second part of that very important statement, though, is know who you are and why you are here. So I can know who I am, but do I really know who I am if I can't fit myself into the system and then discover why am I really here and what kind of difference am I supposed to make? Another quote is, walk and work with those you lead. Don't practice long-distance leadership. So I want to bring it in with that you just said. Again, if I practice long-distance leadership and I don't walk and work with the people as a politician or a business individual, whoever it may be, then I'm not really going to ask the difficult questions. I'm going to be aloof and divorced from the real issues, and I'm never really going to tackle the things that matter. Tabasile, Louis, comments on what Selo just shared?
Look, I think I'm very pleased that the issue of complacency keeps on coming up in this country. My issue is I don't believe after the Mandela legacy was put in place, a lot of us actually understand what it means, even the transition. Because yes, we had in 1994, on both sides, compromises were made, but I think it ended there with a lot of South Africans. And what Sello is telling us is it's got to bother us that we are not a nation that we want to become. But how many of us are discussing these things in our boardroom tables, hoping that the future will change just because we moan about it around our tables? Because as he said, it will get worse if we all sit in our personal spaces, in our own comforts, and think that the rest of South Africa that we are leaving behind will follow us.
Mm.
Slowly, they are pulling away. And I'm hoping that leadership, as Sello puts it, and as the other leaders who are listening, we need to stand up and be counted as South Africans. We need to build a country that we both want to be in, whether we are black or we are white. And that is what will take us forward, so that we begin to be worried that black kids cannot access the work market, that black kids cannot pass at university, because this is not sustainable. Whether you are a scientist or you are just a woman sitting in Soweto, it just doesn't make country sense.
Oh, good point. Louis, do you have any comments to add?
We just, Artie, we have a lot to do with leadership, and that's why we coined the term authentic leadership as opposed to toxic leadership. I think that our spirit of this discussion is about authentic leadership. It's interesting how you can work with people that differ from you if they're authentic and honest. And the point you mentioned in the previous discussion, Tabasila, where you define what kind of compliance do you define?
I talk about people who are maliciously compliant.
So therefore, they agree with top management and they tackle a great task, this great company that she represents. But then some people comply on word. Now we've got to do what you say, etc. But they don't intend to do that. So it's actually being hypocrites in that sense. And it's very dangerous to the organization. So it's malicious compliance. And that's toxic leadership as well.
Well, we have that in the country. Citizens who they just live every day. Maliciously comply. In the meantime, they're sitting in the audience, watching the game on the field, never part of the solution, and even leaving the country. I have lots of friends that have left the country. Maybe leave it if you're not going to be an active participant to try and sort out the issue.
Just mention, Sarah, the last election, was really dynamic and a compliment to our democratic system, but boy, it was so full of blame and entitlement as well. So very little about personal accountability. So ultimately, leadership is a very personal thing. It's about who you are and then what are you prepared to do about that. All the thousands of theories we come across all the time in our case, it boils down to one thing, that leadership is a personal commitment to your own value system. Where else you're just following what is socially correct. So you're not really doing something different.
You know, one of the things that I think we need to revisit is how South Africans want to be led. I say this because I always worry about people who, particularly focusing on political leadership, and it's that person, it's that woman, it's Thabisile actually. What about me? And I think the day that we turn the table and you say, leadership is precisely what Louis said. Leadership is about personal leadership where you lead self. Because when you lead self, you then have standards of accountability that you have for self before you can impose those standards on others. Because it's easy to find fault. It's quite difficult to have to turn the wheel and say, actually, what did I contribute? How did I contribute to the situation getting to where it is now today? And when you do that, you then find that you will be found wanting. That a lot, you won't be able to account yourself for some of the things that would have been done.
Mm. Okay. Another principle that I know you feel strongly about and that we certainly learn from Madiba is those who cling to power, and a man, Spencer Kimball, said this, those who cling to power at the expense of principle often end up doing almost anything to perpetuate their power.
Yeah,
Mandela was the perfect example of not opposite. This, the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I like sharing around leadership is how we are over eager to lead. So our access to power, in fact, makes it impossible for us to see anything else. We just want to get to that high office. I want the title. It doesn't matter who will be hurt in the process. I want the title. And Madiba was the opposite, because when he came out of prison, he was 72, and he got convinced by the ANC to stand as a leader of the ANC, and he refused. He didn't want to lead, and he said he'd rather it be a young man or a young woman. By the way, I emphasize the young woman, because today we still doubt that women can lead. Madiba in 1992 thought a woman could lead South Africa to be president of South Africa. So he said he would rather it be a young man or young woman. And then he went further. He said, even if he was elected to being a president, he then told the ANC, I'd rather serve for one term. That term that he served, he was told, that's not your call. When you go out there, announce that you have agreed to be the leader of the ANC. But when he went and addressed the press conference, said, I've just agreed to being the ANC, the president of the ANC, but I've also said it's on condition that I serve
for one
term.
Was he almost defiant there?
I think it's defiance for a good reason, where you defiant because you know that if you don't make that announcement, later on pressure might be put on you to continue leading. So you want others that you're telling this to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, Florence, didn't you say that you're just going to serve one term? And then you'll be out. And because power can be so charming that one wants to stay on forever. I told Adrian earlier on that it's like I always say football coaches, because I'm a Kaizer Chiefs fan. You don't have to read anything into my statement because I'm a Chiefs fan. But coaches need to know when players are no longer playing for them. And when players stop playing for you, it's time maybe to say, it's not for me.
Can we just take a moment on this principle of sometimes leaders are too eager to lead? Maybe it's too eager for the position or whatever the reason is. And Tabasile, Louis, we can all comment on this. That is sometimes the case in big corporate, isn't it? Because that's how you are paid more. That's where you get more status and more influence and by getting the next position. And it's such a dangerous trap to fall in. To what extent do you lose your authenticity when it's about the next promotion? Tabasile, big corporate, that culture can easily take root.
Look, I think it's a culture of what I would term the old corporates. It does have a very short lifespan in that it doesn't enable you to be innovative, to take companies to the next level, because to hold on to power, you've got to use the same old, same old. But I think there's a new concept of leadership that I think some corporates are playing around with, which is leading from the back. Because if you just understand the authentic African leadership of being a shepherd, you know, sometimes you are most effective leading from the back. It's just unfortunate that our society doesn't actually encourage a lot more people who actually should be leading from the back, are more effective herding from the back, because we recognize only those that we see in the front. And that is the biggest challenge. And one of the things that I like about what he said about Mandela is knowing when it is enough. And I think that point of enough is what we don't know. And when a leader then knows, like Mandela, to know it's enough, you then relegate yourself to the back where you can be consulted on things that matter. And I think corporates need to begin to encourage that sometimes somebody will play a star, you know, shine and show people the way, but then back off to enable the rest of, if I use shepherds, the flock, to follow the lead and walk in front of you. And I think there's no shame in being an authentic African leader who leads from the back with no limelight, but you are even more effective than you would essentially be if you were leading from the front. Because just some people are just never meant to lead from the front.
Again, a principle we discussed earlier when we recorded brief messages for our daily subscription base, our leadership subscription base. And for those of you who are interested, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, soon Vodacom, You can subscribe daily for leadership messages. Selo shared 10 with us earlier. That came out, didn't it? Mandela, that's something he believed in.
Yeah, that's the thing that you heard me screaming as you were speaking, because it resonates with Madiba's legacy. Because I don't think it's only corporates. We're told that the higher you go, the better it gets. Therefore, you want to stick with it when you get to the top. In fact, saying to Adrian earlier on that I find it interesting when I'm introduced to people. So someone would say, "This is Selo Hadang," and I get the first handshake. "Hi, Selo." And then the person says, "He's the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation." Then there's a smile, and it's short of being hugged. And you then get, "Oh, hi, how are you doing?" They now want to know how I'm doing, you know, because earlier on, but it's not me they want to know how I'm doing. They want to know how Nelson Mandela name that I'm carrying is doing. They want, and it's knowing the difference between the two that gives you power as a leader to know that that second greeting was not for me. It was for the name I'm carrying. And when you carry that name, the heavy burden that comes with it can come with perks. Those perks can also sometimes be very destructive.
Okay, there's another quote that I think describes him. "When you really care about your followers, you are able to level with them, to be candid and forthright with them. But that's because you really care for them. Some leaders try and be forthright or candid, but it doesn't come across so lekker because they probably don't feel an underlying caring." Does this describe Mandela?
Well, caring and compassion, I think it's big. But then with being forthright comes honesty, that you can, as a leader, because you care about your followers, that you can be honest and say, "I made a mistake," when you've made a mistake. A good example is Madiba in 1993-94 made the call that 14-year-olds should be allowed to vote. You remember that thing? So he, because he argued that at the time 14-year-olds were very active in the struggle and they could bring about a change. And he then records in his notebook about an NEC meeting where he was Joe Slovo, "This was a reckless statement." Others saying it was you made a mistake here. And he continues to quote all these people. And then he says the Sowetan went further and had a cartoon with a baby in diapers voting. So he then concludes, says, "Conclusion, I've made a grave error of judgment." And how many of us can do that? When you are a leader, you want to be known as flawless. You want people to believe in you because you're strong. You want people to believe in you because you never actually make mistakes. But Madiba's lesson is the opposite. He says, you are at your strongest when you show it that you care enough with the people to put them in your trust and say, "I've made a mistake."
Make yourself vulnerable, don't you? Louis?
I think the previous discussion with Dabasile, she was speaking of and the takeover of another large organization, how she's encouraging them to actually face the people, speak to the people. And they say, no, we can't do that. It's never been done before. Now, great leaders are vulnerable. And the idea of admitting a mistake, it takes a great person to do so. Many people will do so only when they're forced to do so. And it's a case of trust. It's not a case of being a perfect leader. Nobody is a perfect leader because leadership is a process. And as you, what did Muslanti say? That leadership is about working out of opposites. So you've got all these different concepts.
Former President Muslanti, yes.
Even Neil was saying one meeting, Dabasile, he's saying no leader is perfect. But with your team, you can be perfect in the sense that you need to refine all the rough edges. And that means admitting that you're making a mistake. How can you grow without that basic understanding? You have to let go in order to grow. You can't improve without letting go of something. So I love that principle. It's tremendous.
I think for me, what we should learn from Madiba is to become a forgiving society. And I think that's a principle we miss. And that really talks to the fact that we need to allow people to be imperfect and deal with their own errors of judgment and still be able to lead. And so my hope is, and the commitment, hopefully, that the leaders in South Africa need to come back into is to create a country that is authentic, a country that is forgiving of its people, that is nurturing of its people, so that we can almost sail together into this utopia that Mandela set up for us.
But how far are we from that, Selo Thabasile? You know, usually to do that, you need to see it happening at the top. Leaders set the pace and the example. Again, earlier we had the conversation about how Mandela would do specific things to set the pace and consciously set the example for the nation. So that's a serious dream, Thabasile. It's a nice dream. But how are we doing on that as a nation?
So I really believe the Africans, because of its training, you know, since the whole change in Africa, are forgiving by nature. But what then
we do have that.
They don't want to forgive, though, is when you're trying to cover your sins and mistakes. You know, I'm getting it. But the Africans, if you admit openly and proactively, I think by nature they want to forgive. I really believe that's my experience. So it's when you're trying to cover and you protect your power, then you get another part, you draw another part of South Africans. They don't like that.
My sense, Thabasile, is we had that culture and that feeling when Madiba was there. We seem to have become more clinical, trying to sort out economic issues and education and everything else. And somehow we've drifted away from those very important qualities, thinking we're chasing more important things. Maybe we're not.
But I think Selob spoke about it earlier and says we got to ask that, have the right conversations. You know, if we pretend everything is fine in our country, that is where we miss it. Because it's only when the people in Sandton are able to look at their lives from the perspective of the people in Alexander that they will begin to see that this forgiving nation or this forgiving culture is real. Because we were all so close to the end of a country that was so beautiful and forgiveness came in. And therefore, on a daily basis, as people drive to work, they see that. It's just that we're not having the right conversations and we're not bringing them into the boardrooms, into government, because it's easy to all pretend in our air-conditioned cars that these things are not happening. South Africans are forgiving every day. We just don't see it because the media doesn't cover it. The right people are also not talking about it.
I want to throw this into the pot. The other day I tweeted, become a listening leader, not a talking leader. And maybe we're not listening enough or creating listening opportunities. My impression is Madiba was a listening leader. I'm not saying he was a perfect listener necessarily, but you got the feeling he was listening. Whatever structures he used. Sorry, Selo, go ahead.
I tweeted in the same vein. I said we need to be compassionate listeners. You listen with compassion in order to understand the other viewpoint, instead of listening with yourself getting ready to respond. What we tend to do is that we make notes to get ready to respond. So you're not even listening with any kind of compassion to the other. But I want to continue that thing about the what you were saying earlier on, Thabasile, about we are a forgiving nation. But I think forgiveness without healing is what has led us to where we are today. How is it possible that in 2016 you can have that level of lack of human solidarity with the poor, that you can say that people who are the street people who live on the streets should not have access to a dustbin? How is it possible that in 2016 you can say that there are too many black people who are flocking to one part of South Africa? How is it possible that in 2016 you can have people feeling alienated because instead of building bridges, we build higher walls? And these higher walls are about keeping them, the poor, out. Them, the immigrant, out. Them, the blacks, out. Them and the old people, the vulnerable, the children, you want to keep them out. And it's that thing that can destroy a dream that we've had of not only a forgiving, but a forgiving nation that heals itself. So the work of healing still needs to be done. And we haven't done enough of that.
Okay, we've got a few more minutes with you, and we can continue for a few minutes if we need to, but Sello will have to go. We're at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and I want to see if a couple of our managers in the audience today, any questions here for Sello? Guys, anyone want to step up and ask a question? Okay, step up fast. Let's get a question from the floor.
It's not a question per se, but it's a statement that I would like to make. I say, if you know your purpose as a person, you'll never be distracted by anything around the world. So whenever you know your purpose, you know that you'll have faith, and then you'll have honesty to lead in everything that you do. And then what I would like to say is that if we know ourselves better from childhood, that's when we can be able to grow up with that thing.
Okay, a couple of important principles coming out there, but confirming your sense of purpose keeps you on the straight and narrow. And childhood, the role that that plays. I don't know. We started a daily family leadership thought through the mobile networks as well, because we feel there's incredible pressure on families to be successful and happy in today's crazy world. Before we let you go, you've been the CEO for how long?
Since 2013.
So it's a while already, hey?
Yeah.
Very good. And how has it been? Just tell us what it's been like.
I think I've enjoyed it, but enjoyed it with a sense of worry, because the position comes with this heavy burden of knowing that you have Madiba looking over your shoulder. That not only is he looking over your shoulder, but that you're carrying the name. And I think the board took a risk appointing a young leader. When I was appointed, I was 37, 38. And at that age, it's a risk. But it's a risk that I think most of us do not want to take, because we think we know it all. So I think it says to us that it is possible to have a good leader who is young, come through, and be mentored to do better. And I think if there's one thing that the student movement has been teaching us, is that sometimes we, as leaders, we must be ready to be impatient. Because sometimes it's patience that makes us relaxed, and that it leads to complacency. Mm. It's that also ensures that you always reward mediocrity. Mediocrity even of the old. In other words, I'm saying mediocrity is not only found in the young. You can be old, wise, but be mediocre. Mm. And I think that is something that we need to also recognize. Our nation is a nation that's still growing, and sitting in this position, one gets the sense that there's so much that's expected, but that we are not willing to run the mile. That you expect it of others, but you don't want to put in yourself.
Then you have to do the extra mile, I guess, as well. I'm interested in your thoughts on what seems to be more open attacks on the Nelson Mandela leadership legacy as time passes on. And let's not say who and where and what from, but there seems to be more open attacks. Is that your sense? How do you feel? How do you respond to that?
Well, we made the call that Madiba's legacy is one legacy that, like every other legacy, no legacy is static. It must remain relevant to those who are still to be born. In other words, my children's children must be able to identify with the legacy because it speaks to them. So any legacy that's static stands a greater chance of being under attack, because there is no revision of where, how did we miss it? And I think as the foundation, we took a position that we're not about, we were not created to defend Madiba's legacy. We are here to make it relevant. And you put it out there, if people find it relevant, they can use it. Madiba being a sellout, I think again, it's lack of compassion. Where we don't have compassion for those who came before us to say these are the things that they managed to do. And where have I failed them? Because our constitution is one that it can be reviewed, can be amended as many times as we wanted to. He set the foundation with his comrades. All we needed to do was to say, how do we play a role to build on?
Okay, before we let you go, we've got another question from one of the Sibanye managers sitting in the audience.
It's a lot. My name is Florence. Were you actively involved in politics before? Madiba once said, if the ANC government do what the apartheid government did to you, do the same. Are you allowed to, if you see current ANC leadership not doing what Madiba legacy states, can you change and swap to another party that you see now, it's now going into the direction that will maintain Madiba legacy, or you have to stick to the ANC, or is it Madiba legacy go hands in hands with ANC even when ANC is not doing what Madiba is expected to us to do?
Okay, tough question, and it comes back to that statement he did make that's so famous.
Why did you ask Florence to speak? Because I was about to leave.
She came for the microphone. Then,
you know, I was about to get out of here, Adrian.
Clean.
No, clean. Now, thank you very much for that question. Yes, I was active in politics. But then the important thing to remember is that the foundation is not in the political sphere. We are not, we are apolitical. Madiba himself said that when he dies, he's so loyal to the ANC that even when he dies, when he gets to the other side, he will look for the nearest branch of the ANC. If it's not there, he will establish one. So it tells you that his loyalty and commitment was unwavering. Now, with us, we have been engaging with ANC around latest challenges. You'll remember that we issued a statement a couple of weeks ago where we were expressing our own fears and worry about where we were going as a country. But we also put it back to South Africans to say that it's never about one leader. It's never about an individual. That sometimes it's also personal leadership that all of us need to take. And I think it's important that as we find fault, we also try as hard to find a way to sort out the things that we are a country that always finds solutions. No problem has ever been bigger than us. So there's no way that even now we will find that whatever challenges we have are insurmountable. I want to end off with on a note. It says to the listeners out there that for me, one of the key things that we must remember around the legacy is that legacies must outlive the person who created it. And for all of us, we need to find our own ways of creating our own legacies. Legacies that can not only honor the ghosts of those who lost their innocence while trying to find us the freedom that we have today. I was reminded just a couple of days ago of a family that I visited in Mamelodi. Talking about the issue of healing, I visited the family of Madlamene, and Madlamene was lying on her bed, tired from having traveled to Johannesburg the day before, having taken taxis from Mamelodi to go to Luthuli House, because the night before she had dreamed of her son coming to her dreams asking her, "Where am I lying, Mom?" And because she doesn't know where his grave is, she knows that he died in Angola while fighting for our freedom. she found it in herself to go to Luthuli House and say, help me find my son. And I think those voices, those ghosts must not be forgotten, because those that we forget, their children will hound us for not doing the job that we are supposed to do of healing our nation.
Sela Hartung, CEO of Nelson Mandela Foundation, thank you for joining us. We're going to let you go, and we're grateful for your time, and it's great coming to the foundation, to the actual building. There's a nice feeling in the office. I like it. It's just a, I don't know, it's not a casual in a bad way, but there's a very informal, good feeling as you walk through the offices, and thank you for all you do. We look forward to sharing all this wisdom with our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
So that was an interesting conversation with Sello Hartung, CEO of Nelson Mandela Foundation. Let's wrap it up, folks. We've got John Thompson, who's joined us. He also assists with Gibbs Leadership Development with some of the Sibanye managers. And, of course, as I said, we've got Tabasile Pumo and Louis Groenewald. Interesting conversation. And I was just saying to John that before we had this chat with Sello, we also recorded him out of the blue giving a message to South Africa, and I'll play it to you one day. He just leaned forward like this, and he looked into that cell phone camera, and for 5 minutes or so, probably 3 to 5 minutes, he just gave this message that was just so slick and so genuine, and it was almost like he rehearsed it, and I know he didn't, but he didn't even go or. It was just so well done. I think he's grown a lot in 3 years as CEO of this incredible brand. Comments, Tabasile, maybe starting with you, things he said about Mandela, or even maybe some of his comments around the open attacks we get about Mandela's legacy. Or what I'm interested in the last 5 minutes is to say, how do we incorporate and should we incorporate the Mandela leadership legacy into businesses? Should we consciously do it or just trust it's happening? Or is that a discussion that's past?
Look, for me, leadership is the leadership style we choose has got to work for us. There will be corporates that the Mandela leadership style will possibly work for them, and that's what they, because it's about authenticity. And there'll be those corporates for whom this style is not appropriate. I think what Sello left with me is relevance and the fact that there's got to be continuous improvement. So I'm hoping that we will build on the Madiba legacy, make it relevant for the time in which we find ourselves. And that is the only way I think we can move our businesses, we can move our communities, and we can move our country forward.
Mm. Legacy mustn't be static. That was powerful for me. So we can't keep just going back, although we have conversations about his leadership always, I think, to remind us. But he's trying to let this foundation remain relevant and not static. John, you sat quietly listening, of course. Any comments as we wrap it up?
Yeah, I found it a fascinating conversation, and I think for myself and possibly for Louis, legacy is becoming more and more important.
As the age creeps up.
As the age creeps up, and I think if one has grandchildren, for example, one wants to know that when it's our time to go, the legacy we leave is one of hope, one of good values, and one of where when things were... when there were choices that were made, that we made, even if they were difficult, the right choices. So I think legacy is a key learning for me.
Okay, Louis?
I think, Arden, the one expression we use continuously is that good leadership is personal. Now, sometimes you can over-focus on the crisis around us and the problems, but the key to an authentic leader is that he realizes that it's all about his own values and principles. So what I'm saying is that it's good to be concerned about social issues. Yes, we've got to fight for authentic leadership. At the same time, don't lose control of yourself. Don't lose yourself in the process, because then nobody will trust you, because you'll fluctuate like the wind around you. So it's important to understand we need to nourish ourselves on a daily basis in order to maintain our standards, or else we just caught up. We'll be caught up.
For you guys in the back there, there's some of the managers that sat in. If you have any comments on what you took away from this conversation with Sello Hartung, then step up close to a microphone and share your thoughts and feelings. And as you do that, I also want you to think this will be the last formal leadership show of the year. It's the only leadership show that I know of on any media entity. So, unfortunately or fortunately, you're in the hot seat to tell me how you feel about South Africa's leadership the last year and what you hope for in 2017. I mean, it's been an exceptionally tense year. Maybe it's just me. Maybe there's been good and bad of leadership, toxic and authentic leadership. But just your general feel about how we did from a leadership point of view the last year and what you hope we achieve and do in the year to come. So, sorry, you're on the last show of the year. Does anyone back there want to share your thoughts on Tselo Hatang and what you take away from the Nelson Mandela conversation? Some introverts here. Okay, while you think, comments on leadership last year and hope for next year. John?
Yeah, I think that the really special message that comes out for me is the one of hope. And even when...
That did come through strongly, yeah.
Yeah, and I think even when we think that there may be crises in leadership, there is also the message of hope. And then the other is, I think that we've got to be careful of the power game. And Thabezile, I think, positioned it so well. Leaders are not necessarily the people in front. Leaders can be shepherds. And I think that that's an important learning.
Yeah, if you don't have an ego, then you're willing to lead from behind. And there are times that you have to lead in front. I don't know why the one Mandela incident where South Africans almost understandably so asked for war. And he went to a scene where people were killed. What was the scene again? I can't remember. I'm trying to think of the area. And a note was handed to him by someone there whose child was killed or family and said, we're ready for war. And he actually got onto the television at the time. He actually went to the SABC from there and he looked in the camera and he spoke to South Africa. And the way that was, it comes out strongly in the one movie where he said, I know you want war, but I'm afraid unity is what I'm here for. And you elected me your leader, and I'm going to take you to unity, not to war. So he actually probably did what was against the desire of the majority. But because they know he cares and because of his credibility, people were willing to follow him where they didn't emotionally feel they wanted to go. But still they followed him. And that incredible confidence to be able to make a statement to a nation who wants potentially a different route. That was so courageous, so authentic, so real. He was such a good example in so many ways, and I wish we can have more of that. We've got someone who sat closer to the mic.
Yeah, thank you so much. What stood out for me is when he mentioned it, when ANC leaders approached Madiba to lead the ANC, he actually said, put conditions on it that only for one term. And I think all leaders, if they can do that, develop leaders, because you can't lead forever. And if you are a leader and you cannot produce other leaders, then it's as good as nothing. So we need to lead and be able to train or introduce or produce other leaders so that at the end of the day, you can leave the legacy. To say, in my leadership, I managed to train people, I managed to lead, so that even when you are home, there are leaders who are, when they are home, they worry about work. Things won't happen because I'm not there. Meanwhile, you should be able, from day to day, to be able to produce and train leaders.
Thank you so much. Very good comment there. And you know what? We tend to think this is only reasonable for the ruling parties on the African continent, but you look at any political party, opposition party, and you see how long their leaders lead. And you go, hold on, why is it acceptable there and not in the leading party? And you criticize when the leading party wants to rule longer than 8 years. Or, okay, comments on this year's leadership, next year's leadership, and then we need to wrap up.
Okay. For me, I actually think we are in a good space. The time of romantic leadership is gone. And what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is our leaders having a moral crisis where they are beginning to question that romantic relationship they had with the nation. So I believe it offers us an opportunity and them an opportunity to begin to become authentic leaders because their values are being challenged. They're also challenging themselves because that romantic post-democracy relationship is over. So I would say it's a great year for our leadership. Yes, we have a crisis, but we need to separate this too. Our leaders are called to lead for real. Whereas in the last couple of years, a lot of them were on autopilot because of the romance of South Africa. I'm very excited about next year.
Very good context there. It's a very good way of seeing it.
Audience, thank you, Thabezile. I agree 100%. I'm an old man, 75 years old, and I say to you, I'm excited about this country and the possible. I think it's being opened up now. Thabezile's point is valid, and I think we can do it. Really can swing things around.
All right, let's hope we do that in 2017. I'm going to end off with a Sibanye executive leadership thought, and it's the following. Know who you really are. We discussed it earlier in the show, and why you are here. And you can be a junior manager, you can be anyone, and this could be you. Know who you really are. Get to know yourself and why you are here. Then you can lead from strength rather than from weakness and uncertainty. Everyone, thank you for joining us. Next up, our business masterclass. CliffCentral.com.